From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, Blackwater USA, one of the private military contractors that the U.S. has hired to operate in Iraq and other war zones. We'll talk with Jeremy Scahill, author of the new book, Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. He says the company's rise exemplifies how the Bush administration has outsourced and privatized military functions. The company is being sued by several families of Blackwater employees who were killed in Iraq, raising many questions about accountability and oversight when military functions are outsourced to private companies. Also, rock critic Ken Tucker reviews a new album from Jeff Murphy, formerly of the 70s power pop trio Shoes. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The war in Iraq has been partly outsourced to private military contractors, which have performed many of the services that used to be done by the military. My guest, Jeremy Scahill, has written a book about one of those companies, Blackwater, which he describes as the world's most powerful mercenary army and the embodiment of the Bush administration policy of privatizing military functions. The company, which was founded in 1996, made headlines in 2004 when four of its men were ambushed and set on fire by Sunni gunmen in Fallujah. The charred remains of two of the men were hung on a bridge for public display. The families of the four men are suing Blackwater for wrongful death, raising a lot of questions about accountability and oversight when private contractors play a major role in war. Jeremy Scahill is a Polk Award-winning journalist who is a frequent contributor to The Nation and a correspondent for the radio and TV show Democracy Now! Jeremy Scahill, welcome to Fresh Air. If you wanted to write about a private military contractor, why did you focus on Blackwater?
Well, as a reporter, I began going to Iraq in 1998 in the lead-up to the Clinton administration's bombing there in late December of 1998. And it was the first of many trips that I would take to Iraq between 98 and 2003 when the U.S. occupation began. And I had spent time in the city of Fallujah. In fact, in the summer of 2002, I had actually camped out there. And having spent so much time there, I paid particular attention to an event that happened on March 31st, 2004, when four American contractors were ambushed and killed, their bodies burnt and dragged through the streets of Fallujah in a very gruesome, macabre display. And the people of Fallujah literally ripped these four men apart and hung their bodies from a bridge going over the Euphrates River. And so I was paying very close attention to the events and very worried that the United States was going to crush Fallujah because there had already been a tremendous level of violence in the city. And indeed, the Bush administration laid siege to Fallujah a few days after that ambush happened and absolutely destroyed the city, killing hundreds of people, forcing thousands from their homes. And as it emerged that the four men who were killed were from a private military company called Blackwater USA, I had never heard of them before, I said to myself, I want to investigate this company.
Private contractors like KBR, which is a former subsidiary of Halliburton, provide services like getting food and other supplies to troops. Private contractors often, you know, they build things, they bring supplies, they protect people. Would you consider Blackwater like a company of mercenaries or of the kind of contractors who, you know, get food and other supplies and offer protection?
No, I mean, the very essence of a mercenary is a soldier of fortune, and one of the primary motives for becoming a mercenary is monetary gain. Blackwater's heavily armed forces are paid several times the wages of an average soldier, and they serve in Iraq as sort of the vanguard for the Bush administration's occupation. The Bush administration has outsourced one of the most mission-critical tasks in Iraq to Blackwater. Blackwater guards the U.S. ambassador, Zalmay Khalilzad. They guard several regional occupation offices in the country. But then another fact that goes largely unreported is that while Blackwater portrays itself as a sort of American pie business, an all-American company, they actually have recruited mercenaries from some serious human rights violating countries, Chile, Colombia, and elsewhere, and deployed them as part of their force in Iraq.
Have they been involved in combat operations at all?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there was one incident that happened in April of 2004 in Iraq where Blackwater was guarding a regional headquarters of the occupation and Muqtada al-Sadr's followers were engaged in an uprising after the U.S. Arrested one of Muqtada al-Sadr, the fiery Shiite cleric, one of his top aides. And this massive demonstration hit Najaf, where a handful of Blackwater guards were guarding the building. And that day, April 4th, 2004, Blackwater mercenaries engaged in a day-long firefight with the Mahdi army. And in fact, during that battle, there happened to be some U.S. Marines in the area, and a young Marine, Lance Corporal Lonnie Young, actually was aiming his weapon down at the crowd below, and there was no commanding officer on the scene, and so he asked the Blackwater guys for permission to open fire. He said, "Sir, I've acquired a target. Can I open fire?" And the Blackwater guys gave him permission to open fire, and he described the sort of conflicting emotions of killing people that day, and the fact was that Blackwater mercenaries were in overt command of an active-duty U.S. soldier. That's one of many incidents where Blackwater has been engaged in firefights with Iraqis. They've been ambushed by Iraqis. Saudis. Their helicopters have been brought down. So Blackwater has been very much in the thick of things in Iraq.
Can you continue to give us an overview of the role Blackwater employees are playing in the Bush administration-run war on terror?
Well, I call Blackwater the Praetorian Guard of the war on terror, the Praetorian Guard, of course, being the famed Roman mercenaries, because what you find with Blackwater is that they're deployed in the key areas of the war on terror. Their men were among the first people deployed into Afghanistan after 9/11 on a covert CIA contract. They're training forces in Afghanistan. Blackwater has a massive contract with the U.S. State Department to provide what's called diplomatic security. I recently filed a FOIA request and determined that Blackwater has been paid $750 million by the State Department alone since the summer of 2004 to guard senior U.S. officials in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere. Blackwater also has been deployed in New Orleans in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. Several hundred Blackwater contractors were deployed in the hurricane zone. And what's interesting is that Blackwater billed the federal government $950 per day per man in New Orleans. And their men on the ground that I interviewed in New Orleans told me that they were being paid $350 a day. So there's a serious question of where that $600 went. And so what we find is that Blackwater, both at home and abroad, is serving the radical privatization agenda of the Bush administration. And it's rapidly expanding its operations in the United States, opening a new facility in Illinois. They're calling it Blackwater North. And in California, they're calling it Blackwater West. And then they have a 7,000-acre private military facility based on the Great Dismal Swamp of North Carolina. So this company really embodies so much of what's happened in this country and around the world in the wake of 9/11.
What do they do at the private military facility?
Well, they train federal law. They train federal troops. They train troops from various branches of the U.S. military. They train local and federal law enforcement. They provide shooting range for gun enthusiasts. They also train in amphibious landings. They have a man-made lake on their property that they use to train in amphibious landings. They train in defensive driving. Blackwater's manufacturing surveillance blimps that they're marketing to the Department of Homeland Security for use in monitoring the U.S.-Mexico border. This really is a company that's been at the cutting edge of fourth-generation warfare and has become one of the primary players, perhaps the most significant private actor in the war on terror.
Blackwater got a contract in July of 2004 in the oil-rich area of the Caspian Sea. How are they being used there?
Blackwater was sent by the Bush administration into Azerbaijan to set up a special forces unit of the Azerbaijani military. It was a 90-man unit modeled on the U.S. Navy SEALs. At the same time, Blackwater built up in the port city of Baku a command and control center that had been a special forces base of the Soviet Union. And so Blackwater sets up this command and control center and builds up this 90-man Azeri unit based on the U.S. Navy SEALs right in Iran's back door. And so the point of that contract was for Blackwater to set up a military presence, a heavy military presence in a strategically important area. The Caspian Sea, of course, is wealthy with oil and natural gas, but also it's a strategic area, and some analysts have said that it could be used as a forward operating base in attack against Iran. The Iranians took this as a very hostile act and, in fact, deployed a special unit of the Iranian Navy in the Caspian Sea as a direct response to Blackwater's presence there.
We were talking about ways that they might possibly be used, but what exactly are they doing now?
Well, it's unclear because I've tried repeatedly to get updates on the original contract that I obtained, and I've been stonewalled in my efforts to get those contracts. So we literally don't know what Blackwater is doing right now in Azerbaijan.
Now, is that one of your criticisms of the use of private military contractors, that there's no way for citizens to find out what exactly, like how they're being used and why they're being used there? I mean, can Congress find that out?
Oh, I mean, I've interviewed several Congress people who said that they've tried for years to get detailed information on Blackwater's contracts, on other war contractors, arrangements with the government, and they've been stonewalled and stifled. And the fact of the matter is that Blackwater has repeatedly refused to hand over documents requested by Congress. And what's ironic is that when Blackwater refuses to hand over these documents, they say that they're classified. I mean, the irony of telling Henry Waxman, chair of the Government Oversight Committee, that they can't give him a document because it's classified is stark. I mean, I'm a journalist, and you know, Terry, that, you know, you're fighting to try to get documents all the time from the government. But when Congress can't even get them, that should raise major red flags for people in this country as to what exactly these companies are doing with their money and in their names.
Well, how well are those costs actually masked? I mean, doesn't the government have to account for the money it's paying Blackwater?
Well, you know, it's interesting because Representative Henry Waxman of California, since November of 2004, has been trying to get information on one Blackwater contract in Iraq. And it's taken him nearly 3 years to get an answer as to who actually was paying Blackwater for security services in Iraq and who they ultimately were working for under these multi-layered tiers of subcontracts. And so if you just take that one example of one pretty influential congressperson's attempt to find details on one contract, and you replicate that over and over, you find that this is essentially a shadow army that regularly defies Congress.
If Congress can't even find out what they're being paid and what the contracts are, how are the private military contractors being funded? I mean, where does the money come out of? What budget?
Well, Blackwater, for instance, the overwhelming majority of its work in Iraq is actually through the U.S. State Department. A lot of people erroneously believe that that all contractors are working for the U.S. military. Blackwater has been paid $750 million since June of 2004 by the U.S. State Department, and that represents its single largest contract in Iraq. But also the Pentagon pays these war contractors, the United States Agency for International Development. I mean, basically the federal feeding trough is broken down into various federal agencies, and Blackwater just happens to have attached itself to the State Department portion of that.
When we're told by the Bush administration how much money we're paying for the war in Iraq, does that include the money that we're paying private military contractors?
Well, Representative Jan Schakowsky of Illinois estimates that 40 cents on every dollar spent on the occupation of Iraq goes to the private sector. And of that, $4 billion is being paid out to private military companies, according to Henry Waxman. So, yes, I mean, this is a big part of the cost of waging war in Iraq.
But it's part of the official cost. It's included in the official cost.
Yes, originally it was part of the reconstruction budget, and it continues to be part of the ongoing budget for the occupation of Iraq.
My guest is Jeremy Scahill, author of the new book, Blackwater. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Jeremy Scahill. He's a journalist who's written a new book about the private military company Blackwater, and the book is called Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. As you pointed out, one of the turning points of the war in Iraq was in Fallujah, when four men working in Iraq for Blackwater were killed by insurgents, and then the charred remains of two of them were hung from a bridge in Fallujah, hung on display. Now, the families of the four men who were killed have filed wrongful death suits against Blackwater. On what grounds?
Well, the families of these four men who were killed in Fallujah all believe that their loved ones were going to be providing security for Ambassador Paul Bremer in Iraq, and that they were going to be doing very important work as special forces operators. They didn't think of their loved ones as being contractors. They thought of them as being soldiers, what they'd always been their entire careers. And these guys were successful, decorated special forces operators. And so they went over to Iraq. They're working for Blackwater USA. And they're sent into Fallujah. And the problems began with the fact that their contracts, the contracts that they were working under, provided that they would be sent out with three men to a vehicle. They were sent out with only two men to a vehicle. That third man in the vehicle would have been a rear gunner armed with a heavy machine gun. They were also supposed to be, according to the contracts, provided with armored vehicles. They were sent in Pajero Jeeps, which are widely known in Iraq as bullet magnets. They were sent out that day, according to the lawsuit of the families, without a map and without the opportunity to do pre-mission intelligence gathering. And so these families, when their loved ones were killed, began asking Blackwater questions. How did this happen? What were they doing doing in Fallujah? What was their mission that day? And they say that they were stonewalled by Blackwater for months. And then in October of 2004, Blackwater flew the families to its compound in North Carolina for a memorial service for their loved ones. And one of the mothers of one of the Blackwater contractors killed, Donna Zavko, asked a Blackwater representative for the report on the ambush and asked her for her son's belongings. And the Blackwater representative, she says, said that the report is classified, and if you want that information, you'll have to sue. And so the families started to get to know each other and talked about it further. And then in January of 2005, they filed a wrongful death lawsuit against Blackwater in the state of North Carolina, alleging that they had the company had defrauded their loved ones, not provided them with their contractually obligated safeguards. And this is a case that is being monitored very closely by the whole war contractor industry, because I think there's a concern that, like the tobacco litigation, once the first domino falls, the whole pyramid starts to crumble.
How is Blackwater defending itself?
Very, very aggressively. Blackwater has enlisted some of the most powerful Republican lawyers in the country to defend it. The original lawyer on the case was actually Fred Fielding, who now is Bush's White House counsel. He replaced Harriet Myers. The current counsel of record for Blackwater is none other than Kenneth Starr, the man who led the impeachment charge against President Clinton. At one point, they retained Greenberg Traurig, the powerhouse law firm. And so Blackwater has never disputed the particulars of the lawsuit. But what they've done is they've tried to argue that they should be immune from civilian litigation in the United States because Donald Rumsfeld classified Blackwater and other contractors as part of the U.S. total force, as an official part of the U.S. war machine. And so Blackwater has filed a series of briefs saying that, look, if you allow us to be sued, it's like allowing the military to be sued. And it basically invades the rights of President Bush to wage war as he sees fit. And the courts don't belong in that process, Blackwater has argued in its legal briefings and its legal papers filed with various courts. And the fact is that twice the U.S. Supreme Court, which we should point out is dominated by Republican appointees, rejected Blackwater's appeals. And so it seems now that this case is going to go ahead in state court in North Carolina, where there would be no cap on damages a jury could award.
Well, Blackwater is arguing that it shouldn't be subjected to civil trials. But at the same time, it doesn't come under the jurisdiction of the military. It's not held accountable to the military code of justice.
Right. I mean, Blackwater has essentially declared its forces above any effective law, while resisting its attempts to have its private forces subjected to the Pentagon's court-martial system, the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Blackwater also claims this immunity from civilian litigation. In fact, the only law that Blackwater wants applied to its forces is one that has no teeth and has not been enforced in Iraq or elsewhere, and that's the Military Extraterritorial Jurisdiction Act of 2000, which is a law that says that contractors operating in the war zone should be subjected to the U.S. court system, the criminal court system in the United States. The fact is, Terry, that there are 100,000 contractors in Iraq, and only one has been indicted on any kind of charges.
So in this Fallujah lawsuit, Blackwater filed a countersuit against the families who are suing. What does the countersuit say?
Well, Blackwater would say that they're not suing the families. They're suing the estates of the four men killed at Fallujah, saying that they violated the terms of the men's contract, which said that they wouldn't sue in the event of their death in Iraq or in the war zone. And so this is a $10 million claim that was filed in an attempt to force the lawsuit out of the court system and into arbitration proceedings. It's part of Blackwater's multi-pronged approach to fighting this lawsuit. They're trying desperately to get this case out of state court in North Carolina. And this is one of the great moves in that game.
So do all employees of Blackwater have to sign a pledge that they will never sue?
Oh, you should read the contract that these guys sign when they go into Iraq. It basically lists every possible way a human being could be killed, including debris falling from the sky. And it says that you won't hold Blackwater accountable for your death. But what the families of the four men killed would allege is that that's all well and good, except you also were operating under a contract, Blackwater, that said these men would be provided with armored vehicles, heavy weapons, three men to a vehicle. And the families say you defrauded our men, and that nullifies the contract.
Now, there's another suit against Blackwater that might be precedent-setting. Would you describe that suit?
Yeah, the other lawsuit stems from an incident that happened actually in Afghanistan in November of 2004. Blackwater was on contract with the government to be operating airplanes inside the country as sort of a ferry service for the U.S. military. They would take personnel and equipment and other supplies from point A to point B inside of Afghanistan. And in November 2004, they were operating a flight that had on board not just Blackwater contractors, but also active duty U.S. soldiers. And the plane crashed into the side of a mountain, killing all of those on board. One of the soldiers actually survived for a brief period of time before ultimately dying. And the difference between this and the Fallujah lawsuit is that in this case, you had active duty U.S. soldiers killed. And as a result, the National Transportation Safety Board did an investigation, the U.S. military did an investigation. And what emerged from that is the military essentially finding Blackwater at fault for the flight. They released the transcripts of the cockpit data recorder, and it showed that the pilots were essentially messing around. You're an X-wing fighter, Star Wars man. And there were a number of other questions about whether or not all the safety precautions were taken that day. And so the families of the active duty soldiers have filed a lawsuit against Blackwater's aviation division, alleging that the company is responsible for their deaths as well. And the judge that's been hearing this case in federal court has been very aggressive in rejecting Blackwater's arguments that it should be immune from this litigation. And so whichever one of these comes to fruition first, Fallujah or Afghanistan, could very well be a precedent-setting case.
Jeremy Scahill will be back in the second half of the show. His new book is called Blackwater. He's a frequent contributor to The Nation and is a correspondent for the radio and TV show Democracy Now! I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Support for NPR comes from Barnes & Noble, publishers of the Barnes & Noble Classics edition of Virginia Woolf's early novel, Night and Day, in stores and online at bn.com. And from the Horace W. Goldsmith Foundation, supporting the Museum of Modern Art in Midtown Manhattan. Information at moma.org. CDs and transcripts of Fresh Air are available from Burrell's Loose at 1-877-21-FRESH. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, the political connections of Blackwater's leadership. We continue our conversation with journalist Jeremy Scahill about his new book, Blackwater, and rock critic Ken Tucker reviews the new solo album from Jeff Murphy. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Jeremy Scahill, the author of the book Blackwater, the World's Largest Mercenary Army. The book is an investigation into the private military company Blackwater, which has a contract with the State Department to provide security to guard senior American officials in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere. Scahill raises a lot of questions about oversight and accountability when military functions are outsourced to private companies like Blackwater. There have been several attempts in Congress to bring more scrutiny to the private military contractors. What's the latest?
Well, the latest is there's a real war going on Capitol Hill right now. There are a number of pieces of legislation making the rounds, and the real debate boils down to whether or not private military contractors should be subjected to the military's court-martial system or whether they should be subjected to the jurisdiction of U.S. prosecutors. Lindsey Graham, a conservative South Carolina Republican who has been a military lawyer for the Air Force, slipped in language late last year to the Defense Authorization Bill that President Bush signed into law that essentially said contractors are now subject to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, the court-martial system. Well, the mercenary industry went bonkers when Lindsey Graham did that, and they said it's unconstitutional. We're civilians. You can't put us under the court-martial system. And it might be one area where civil libertarians and the mercenaries actually agree. So on the other side of that, you have Barack Obama, Jan Schakowsky, and David Price, a Democrat from North Carolina. They're pushing forward with an attempt to place contractors under the U.S. court system. And so those are the two approaches that are really being taken right now. But in addition to the legislation, Representative Henry Waxman of California has been on a warpath against Blackwater. And I understand that he intends to continue holding hearings on the company and finds it outrageous that their operations are so cloaked in secrecy. So Blackwater really is going to find itself increasingly in the crosshairs. Some people are calling it the new Halliburton.
Now, on the subject of accountability, Paul Bremer, just as he was leaving his position as head of the Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq, issued a decree called Order 17. What did this decree do?
It effectively immunized private contractors from any kind of prosecution in Iraq, and essentially said that Iraqis can't seek justice for any crimes committed by private contractors in Iraq, and that it's the responsibility of the home government to prosecute these guys. And what's interesting about Paul Bremer's use of Blackwater security in Iraq, as one colonel says in my book, if the U.S. military regarding Bremer and he got killed, there would be an internal investigation. Maybe there would be a court-martial if they found the soldiers at fault for his death. If Blackwater lost Paul Bremer, it would crush their business. Their whole point of operating in Iraq at that time was to keep Bremer alive. And so it was the most dedicated, determined adherence to the free market doctrine that someone like Paul Bremer could have displayed. He put his life literally in the hands of the private sector at a time when he was the most hated man in Iraq.
So you're suggesting that they would go to any means necessary to protect him, even if that meant killing people who might be innocent, and then there'd be no way of prosecuting them for it?
I mean, there are so many reports of Blackwater contractors just preemptively shooting at Iraqi vehicles as its convoys make their way through the country. And some of these reports come from senior military officials who were tasked with looking at security in Iraq. They said that they would ride around with their Iraqi counterparts, and Blackwater guys would run them off the road. And so these guys are known for being very, very aggressive. And the whole point of their operation is to keep their noun alive. And their noun was Paul Bremer. It's now Zalmay Khalilzad. And so they're going to do everything it takes to not lose the noun.
Now, as you've pointed out, Blackwater is also trying to get more and more work within the United States. It for instance, was hired as a private contractor after Hurricane Katrina. What kind of services did it perform?
Well, it's interesting because Blackwater beat most agencies of the federal government to the hurricane zone. And when it initially deployed about 180 men, it didn't have any government contracts, according to company officials. They say that they just went down there to help out in the relief effort. I was in New Orleans in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. I was actually talking to two New York City police officers on Bourbon Street when all of a sudden a compact car with no license plates pulls up and these big burly guys with flak jackets and M4 machine guns and wraparound sunglasses and shaved heads get out of the car and say to the New York police officers, do you know where the rest of the Blackwater guys are? And the police officer said, yeah, there's a bunch of them down the road. And I turned to the police officer and I said, Blackwater? You mean like the guys in Iraq? And he said, yeah, they're all over the place. So I walked around and I found some Blackwater guys and I talked to them about what they were doing there. And they told me very clearly that they were on contract with the Department of Homeland Security, that they were staying in a Homeland Security camp outside of New Orleans. One of them showed me a gold law enforcement badge and said he'd been deputized by the governor of Louisiana. When I asked them what their mission was in New Orleans, they said that they were there to confront criminals and stop looters. And the fact of the matter is that these Blackwater guys were riding around in unmarked vehicles, heavily armed. Several of them had just been in Iraq or Afghanistan a couple of weeks earlier. So it was very disturbing to see the presence of these private forces on the streets. I mean, you know, what are they going to do if they see a woman coming out of a department store carrying diapers that she didn't buy, that she took out of the department store? I mean, what are these private soldiers supposed to do? And after I reported that they said that they were on contract with the Department of Homeland Security, the federal government was forced to admit it. And it turns out that they were paying these guys $350 a day, and Blackwater was billing the government $950 a day for their services. At one point, Blackwater had 600 men deployed from Texas to Mississippi, and they were raking in more than $240,000 a day.
Is Blackwater trying to get more work in the United States in the aftermath of natural disasters?
Oh, absolutely. Blackwater representatives recently met with California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger to talk with him about doing disaster response in the event of a California earthquake. The company has applied for operating licenses in all of the coastal states of the United States. And as I said, they're opening military and law enforcement training facilities in Illinois and in California. They're sort of building a triangle around the country. And it's a home base in North Carolina is an impressive facility. It's 7,000 acres. It has a state-of-the-art 60,000 square foot corporate headquarters that welcomes visitors with door handles made from muzzles of automatic weapons. And, you know, Blackwater was founded with the idea of anticipating increased government outsourcing of military training. And so Blackwater is really positioning itself to cash in for many, many years to come.
Is it fair to say that the role of private military contractors started really expanding under the leadership of Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld?
Oh, this is the life's work of those two. I mean, Dick Cheney, when he was defense secretary under George H.W. Bush, one of the last things he did was to commission a study from a division of Halliburton, the company that he would go on to head, looking at how to greater privatize the military bureaucracy. Well, that was laying the groundwork for this war contractor bonanza that we've seen unfold since 2001. Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld and other officials came to power in this country with a radical privatization agenda. But the fact of the matter was, that 9/11 provided Cheney and Rumsfeld and the neoconservative clique that sort of operated in the White House in those days with this blank slate on which to paint their privatization picture. And Iraq was considered a slate to be wiped clean and built up from the ground.
We were talking about new roles for private military contractors. Blackwater wants to be able to use its people as part of peacekeeping forces in Darfur. What exactly are they trying to do?
Yeah, this was an initiative that really became public in March of 2006. Kofor Black was at a military conference in the nation of Jordan and announced that Blackwater would be willing to go into Darfur as a sort of privatized peacekeeping force. And Blackwater's really been in this intensive lobbying campaign to get permission from someone, whether it's the UN or the U.S. government or NATO, to deploy in Darfur. And you know, one of the great concerns, I think, about this scenario is that so much of the violence in Sudan is attributable to militia violence. And so if you add yet another private armed force to this situation, it's a cause for, I think, real serious concern. You know, Blackwater always says it would only act in the interests of the U.S., but Congress is finding it almost impossible to shed light on its operations. So it all sounds good on paper. Let's send in this effective fighting force that talks about Janjaweed be gone and an anti-genocide force. But what happens if things go wrong? Well, when things go wrong in Iraq and Afghanistan, Congress finds it almost impossible to get information from Blackwater. They've refused to repeatedly to turn over documents. So what happens when you send these guys into Darfur? You add yet another private military operation to the mix, and you create a situation where nation states and international bodies are privatizing out these operations to private military companies, private mercenary companies. And in the process, you sort of subvert international order. Because, yes, maybe Blackwater could go in there and wipe out the Janjaweed militia. But what happens the day after that? Where's the political process in this? More violence is not what's needed in Darfur right now. And the fact is that Eric Prince and others from Blackwater have been part of Christian organizations that have targeted Sudan for years. A very disturbing thing happened last October. President Bush lifted partial sanctions on the south of Sudan, the Christian region of the country. And the South Sudanese representative in Washington said he expected Blackwater to start training forces in the south of Sudan sometime soon. And he said this in January. So it's really a disturbing development, and I think a disturbing proposal by Blackwater.
My guest is Jeremy Scahill, author of the new book, Blackwater. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is journalist Jeremy Scahill, and he's written a new book about the private military contractor Blackwater, which is taking a large role in the war on terror in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other places. And the new book is called Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. Now, the founder of Blackwater, Eric Prince, is very politically connected. Let's talk about him, starting with the fact that he's from a very wealthy family. How did his family make their fortune?
Eric Prince grew up in the Midwestern state of Michigan in a town called Holland. And his dad, Edgar Prince, was very much the king of Holland. He was a pull yourself up by your bootstraps kind of guy who built up an empire, a company called the Prince Manufacturing Corps. And Prince Manufacturing was best known for creating the now ubiquitous lighted sun visor in a car. So when you pull down your visor and you see it light up, that's from the Prince family. What Eric Prince's father taught him was to mix a sort of strict adherence to a Calvinist religious doctrine with a strong embrace of the free market gospel. And so Eric Prince, as a young man, watched as his father used the family business as a cash-generating engine to fuel the rise of the religious right, as well as the Republican Revolution of 1994 that brought Newt Gingrich to power. And so his father was a major contributor to many Republican campaigns, but also to Gary Bauer, for instance, the founder of the Family Research Council. He gave Gary Bauer the seed money to start the organization. Young Eric Prince was among the first interns there. The Prince family also contributed heavily to James Dobson and Focus on the Family. Eric Prince, interestingly, is very close to Chuck Colson, the former Watergate conspirator and one of Bush's advisors, spiritual advisors. And this was a guy who was Nixon's hatchet man, and he's now running faith-based prisons. So Eric Prince grew up in this atmosphere where his family was very close to the religious right, very close to conservative politics. Prince himself interned in George H.W. Bush's White House, but he complained that it wasn't conservative enough on gay issues, the budget, and the environment. He also worked on Pat Buchanan's insurgent campaign for president in 1992 when he ran on a very xenophobic, anti-immigrant line. Eric Prince himself has contributed upwards and his immediate family of $250,000 in traceable money to federal Republican campaigns. And interestingly, he's never given a penny to a Democrat, which is certainly his right. But he has given money to Green Party candidates to defeat Democrats. And this is a very unusual pattern for the head of a powerful corporation to put all of his eggs in one basket. But this guy is a committed ideologue.
Now, Eric Prince, the founder of Blackwater, is a former Navy SEAL.
In fact, he's believed to be the wealthiest person ever to serve in the U.S. Navy SEALs. And he was deployed in Haiti. He was deployed in Bosnia, in the Mediterranean. And I don't think he actually wanted to leave the Navy SEALs. But in 1995, his father died of a heart attack, and his wife had been diagnosed with cancer. And I think that being in the SEALs was no longer a reality for him. And I think that's why he turned his sights on setting up a military company that would effectively operate itself like a privatized special forces unit.
Now, Joseph Schmitz is the vice chairman of Blackwater, and he had been the Pentagon's inspector general. So he's kind of connected to the private and the government world. Is he very politically connected?
Well, Joseph Schmitz was the Pentagon Inspector General at a time when the war contractor bonanza was just exploding. And his job effectively was to police the largest war contractor bonanza in history. And he was basically forced to resign under fire from Democrats and Republicans alike, accusing him of not doing his job. And then he turns around and takes a job with one of the most successful of those war contractors, Blackwater USA. Joseph Schmitz is a committed Christian activist. He himself is the one who brags of his membership in the Military Order of Malta, the Christian militia dating back to the First Crusade. And if you read through his speeches from when he was Inspector General, he absolutely adored Donald Rumsfeld. He gave a speech one time in which he went on and on about Rumsfeld's career as a wrestler. And so this is a guy who was very close. He was a Republican, devoted Republican disciple. He was very close to the Bush administration, and now he's in a leadership position at Blackwater USA.
Another highly placed person within Blackwater is Kofor Black. What's his position in Blackwater, and where was he before that?
Kofor Black is a vice chairman of Blackwater, and he's perhaps one of the most famous spies in U.S. history. Kofor Black was a 30-year veteran of the Central Intelligence Agency when he came to Blackwater in February of 2005. This was a man who Osama bin Laden had marked for death in Sudan in the 1990s when Black was a CIA operative there. Kofor Black is also the man who caught Carlos the Jackal, at the time the most famed international terrorist. He caught him in Sudan. Black went on to serve for decades in the CIA. And when 9/11 happened, he was the coordinator of the CIA's counterterrorism center and the man tasked with beginning the hunt for Osama bin Laden. And on September 13th, 2001, he's in the White House Situation Room throwing papers on the ground, explaining to President Bush how he's going to drop in special forces operators throughout Afghanistan. And he would talk in these terms: we're going to put their heads on spikes. We're going to have flies crawling across their eyeballs. He talked about chopping bin Laden's head off with a machete so that you had DNA to know it was him. And he actually promised President Bush that he would bring Osama bin Laden's head back from Afghanistan in a box on dry ice. Well, of course, that didn't happen. And so Kofor Black was one of the key players in the early stages of the war on terror, one of the key players in the real escalated use of the Extraordinary Rendition Program. And now he's one of the key players at Blackwater USA and recently announced that he had formed his own private intelligence company. These guys are really on the cutting edge of private military, private security, private intelligence. And so Blackwater really has stacked its deck with veteran spies, veteran government officials, and very influential political figures.
Would you just like summarize for us what you think the major concerns are about the expanding role of private military companies?
Well, I think that the Bush administration has stretched our domestic armed forces to the limit. A draft is off the table for political reasons. And so the U.S. government is left to sort of struggle to find allies willing to staff its unpopular wars. And private military companies have come in and filled that vacuum for the Bush administration. So no longer do we have a real democratic process when it comes to the decision to go to war, and no longer do we have that sort of push and pull that would come from how many people do you have in your military, how many people are willing to serve in the military. Mercenaries have provided the Bush administration with the opportunity to wage sort of endless war. It's only how much you're willing to pay these private forces. If you can't recruit the government of Chile to support your operations in Iraq, you can still hire their soldiers. And so what this really does is it's subverts democratic processes, and it subverts the natural resistance that people have to aggressive or offensive wars. The other layer of this is that the operations of these companies are absolutely shrouded in secrecy. Not even senior officials within Congress, senior members of Congress, can get detailed information on their contracts. And so what we're doing is we're taking ourselves further and further away from oversight and transparency and accountability. We already have enough problems in this country trying to oversee official U.S. forces. Now you add 100,000 contractors to the mix, it just is a very frightening and disturbing development in the history of warfare.
Have you spoken to a lot of military leaders about what they consider to be the pros and cons of the Bush administration's reliance on private military contractors?
Well, what senior military officials have been saying publicly lately is that they think we have to watch the use of these armed contractors very, very closely. Most recently, General John Abizaid said it on Ted Koppel's documentary that we really have to be careful about the use of these heavily armed contractors. I think also there's a real concern in the military community that the numbers are dropping in the special operations forces. In fact, in Iraq right now, it's there's a slang term for a soldier who goes to work for any private military company. They call it going Blackwater. And so if you think about it, if you're a grunt in Iraq and you're out there risking your life and you maybe don't even have adequate body armor and you see these Blackwater guys making $600, $800 a day for doing the same kinds of things that you're doing, there's a lot of resentment. And so it's impacting morale within the military as well when you have these highly paid mercenaries running around in Iraq and the soldiers are looking at them and saying, you know, well, how come they're getting a six-figure salary and I'm getting $35,000 a year and I've got a pregnant wife at home? And so it really, I think, has impacted morale within the military as well.
Well, Jeremy Scahill, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Jeremy Scahill is the author of the new book, Blackwater. We phoned and emailed Blackwater asking for an interview, but they never got back to us. We also contacted the State Department, which has a contract with Blackwater, but we were told no one will be available to speak to us. Coming up, Ken Tucker reviews a new CD by Jeff Murphy, formerly of the 70s power pop trio Shoes. This is Fresh Air. In the late 70s, the power pop trio called Shoes operated out of their hometown in the Chicago suburb of Zion, Illinois. They started their own label, Black Vinyl Records, and brothers Jeff and John Murphy and their friend Gary Klebe wrote, produced, and performed tight little pop songs that our rock critic Ken Tucker has long admired. Now, after a silence of almost 10 years, one brother, Jeff Murphy, has released a solo album called Cantilever. Ken has a review.
That's Jeff Murphy singing all the multi-track vocals, playing all the instruments, and producing himself on the new album, Cantilever. One dictionary definition of cantilever is, quote, any rigid construction extending horizontally well beyond its vertical support. And while his music is never rigid, Jeff Murphy may be using the word to suggest that he's extending his range beyond the support of his band Shoes. What he's really doing is extending the themes that Shoes has always pursued. Mournful love, sympathy for an adored one that's not always reciprocated.
Every day's a challenge if you can't define your goals. Even though you've been to school, there's much that you don't know. Maybe there's no answer when you look inside your soul. I don't know. Living through the TV screen is
all you'll ever know. Kings and queens live out their dreams in themes from long ago. Maybe that's the answer. Maybe life's a dream. You're having a bad day. It's just another one. Having a bad day. There's plenty more to come. If you sit inside, inside, you can't expect the world to change. You're having a bad day.
Whatever Jeff Murphy loses in not harmonizing in the uniquely breathy, intense way he did with his brother John, he gains in a certain independence. Shoes never had much truck with keyboards. They were guitar and drum boys. But as a middle-aged multi-talent, Jeff Murphy adapts the Shoes' sound to different sonic landscapes. He also gets away with using one of the most overused words in rock lyrics, that would be icon, in a fresh, original way. There's one song here that can not only stand with the best of what Shoes ever did, but also with the best of any current music out there. Jeff Murphy knows it, too. I'm sure that's why he used it to lead off Cantilever. It's called I'm a Tool for You, and it's pretty glorious.
Let me be your digital wave. Let me be your plasma display. I can be those clothes that you wear, oh, the dye that you use when diamond ring. I'm the food that you eat. I'm that song that you sing. You can think of me in whatever you do. I'm whatever you need. I'm a tool for you.
As that song proves, Jeff Murphy is really nobody's tool. In the press note accompanying this album, he says proudly that there are no drum machines or fancy technology, but he does use a hammer and a crowbar for percussion on I'm a Tool for You, and his wife's candy dish for percussion on another song. As a band, Shoes was always an admirable do-it-yourself operation. As a solo artist sitting out there in Zion, Illinois, Jeff Murphy is an inspiration who keeps on doing exactly what he wants, aiming for the mass audience in his head, willing us to listen.
Ken Tucker is editor-at-large for Entertainment Weekly. He reviewed Cantilever by Jeff Murphy. Fresh Air's executive producer is Jenny Miller. Our senior producer is Roberto Schurach. Our engineer is Julian Hertzfeld. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Sue Spolin directed the show. I'm Terry Gross.
Don't want to stand in your way. You really need to be free. It's just a matter of time until you say it.
Support for NPR comes from Endless Pools, swimming machines designed for exercise, fitness, and fun. DVD at 888-882-SWIM or endlesspool.com. From the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, exploring how technology is changing kids and learning at digitallearning.macfound.org. And from the Pew Charitable Trusts at pewtrusts.org. Funding the international traveling exhibition, Benjamin Franklin, In Search of a Better World, now in Denver. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Joe Boyd was the stage manager when Dylan went electric at Newport. Boyd produced recordings by Pink Floyd, the Incredible String Band, Fairport Convention, and Nick Drake, and ran a psychedelic rock club in London. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Joe Boyd about making music in the 60s. Join us for the next Fresh Air.